Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
On the 5th of August at around 5 a.m. in the sweltering summer of 2009, the tranquility of Phoenix, Arizona was shattered by a discovery that literally sent shockwaves through the entire community. The charred remains of Terry Neely, a 46-year-old disabled and vulnerable man, were found in a trash container outside a church, a grim testament to the brutality that he had endured. This gruesome find marked the beginning of a harrowing investigation that would lead authorities to Angela Simpson, a woman with a chilling story to tell. This is the case of Angela Simpson. I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. Let's talk about today's case. Really, this case is infamous, I would say, because of the interviews that Angela Simpson did after she was arrested for the murder of Terry. And even those, I think, are worthy of some analysis, because I think the way that she portrays herself and the way that she wishes to come across is probably very different to the actual human being that lies beneath. So even if you've seen this case covered before, hopefully if you watch this one, you will still go away with some new ideas about how this played out, who Angela Simpson was and is, and of course, whether she truly is a cold-blooded psychopathic killer. Now, when it comes down to who Angela Simpson is, I mean, there isn't a great deal of information out there. There's not a lot of information about her life before the murder. I would say that certainly she's a product of dysfunction. I mean, if we just consider the fact that I'm talking about the murder of a very vulnerable man at the hands of this woman in such a torturous way, one will not imagine that she's come from the best environment. I know people will say murderers come in all ways, shapes and forms. They do, but there are certain types of killing that tend to engender a particular psyche of dysfunction. And certainly when I was looking at the background of Angela Simpson, even though it's sparse, I can tell that she was moved from Pillar of the Post and she didn't have a lot of security in her life. She was born on November the 29th, 1975. She was fostered, so she was in the system. And we all know that whilst there are lots of successes in the foster and care system, there are far more problems that arise from individuals who've had to endure that kind of experience and have the level of dysfunction in their lives that have led to them needing to be fostered. That means that behaviourally and just on a general level success-wise, individuals who endure that kind of background struggle more. It's not because they are not worthy. It's not because they do not absolutely deserve to have the best opportunities and the most successful futures ahead of them. It just means that because of those problems and the limitations that are involved within them, that they don't get a fair start, so to speak. So the very knowledge that she was in the foster system and that she was moved from pillar to post does suggest that she would be somebody who had big attachment issues. And I also think that when you're a child, it's really powerfully important to feel valued, to feel loved, to feel that the people that you're being brought up with adore you and raise you up and notice the charms and idiosyncrasies and the most positive of ways about who you are. And if you don't have that, then you can question your worthiness. You often can struggle with self-esteem. The world can feel like a deeply insecure place and a place that you can't trust. And that can, with certain personality traits, when merged together, particularly with those that are more antisocial, mean that you don't necessarily have the same level of value over other people either. Now, for the most part, individuals who struggle with attachment because of their childhoods will be the very opposite of that. There'll be individuals who are sensitive and loving and caring and compassionate and probably will put up with behaviours that they shouldn't put up with. And not see themselves as deserving of those human beings, and that will be used against themselves. But like I said, if you have these issues and then mix that with a whole heap of antisocial personality traits, well, that can be a cooking pot of problems where an individual may start to seek, shall we say, a level of vengeance against the world around them they feel let down by. She's also said to have been abused from the age of 10 years of age, which is horrific. We're talking about a little girl. And to be abused in any way when you're a child is harrowing. But when you've not got the security of parents around you or close relations who can protect you and at least make you feel safe occasionally from the horrors that are affecting you, it means that you're going to have that even higher level of isolation in your life, because you're not going to have people that make you feel safe, and you're going to be in a position where you are unsafe because of the abuse. And I think that Angela Simpson is clearly a product of that system. And as she's moving through the slings and arrows of the outrageous fortune that she's been dealt, understandably, there's going to be a level of rage building. Now, what I could find out about her mental health is that she has been diagnosed with several mental disorders. And she, in her own words, said that she'd been in and out of mental health facilities since the age of 10. In fact, it appears that she was consistently hospitalized, and from my point of view, that means that she's also institutionalized. And that's important to bring that in at this point, because it can feel highly unusual to imagine that somebody would be more comfortable in an institution than outside of one, because we imagine that freedom is everything. But if you haven't got boundaries, if you haven't got a sense of security, if you haven't got the means and ends to protect yourself, then what happens in institutional situations is that you are provided with an expectation behaviour-wise, you're provided with meals, you're provided with shelter, you're provided with a lack of responsibility when it comes down to, for example, having to get a job, paying your rent, all of these things that you would normally do in society, they're removed from you. And whilst for the majority of us that would be horrible, for people who have only ever really experienced that and have had a comparison of that with what happens outside of those environments, such as being abused, such as finding yourselves homeless, such as finding yourself being used and abused by people around you because of your vulnerabilities, that could literally mean that those institutions feel more appealing than freedom. And she didn't have a nurturing childhood, that's clear. Her childhood was far from idyllic. She had various family members who were in prison, so she's used to the system. And within her family, it feels that going to prison, mental illness, and also abuse were all things that were considered quite normalised because they were very prevalent. Now, as soon as Angela Simpson got out of the hospital, she would just start taking drugs. She was somebody who repeatedly had dependency issues. She never had a normal job, which makes absolutely perfect sense, because how do you have the discipline and organisation and boundaries required when you've had such a dysfunctional life? Again, that isn't to excuse her behaviour, and certainly not to excuse what we're going to explore today. But when you think about what creates these individuals, she has endured and suffered in ways that we would not want any child to endure and suffer. And understandably, she hasn't got the foundations from which she can aspire to do better. And it seems that whilst many people can do that, those variables don't exist where Simpson is concerned. And because she hasn't got the capacity to hold down a day-to-day job, it means that she has to come across money somehow. So she starts engaging in crime, and she uses sex work to get money so that she can support herself, but also so she can manage her dependencies. She wants to buy drugs. And before she's arrested for the crime I'm going to talk about today, she'd genuinely been in and out of prison for much of her adult life. This had been for things like fighting, for trespassing, for aggravated assault, for carjacking, for robbery, and so on and so forth. So we're talking about an escalation in criminality. And the very reality that we've just heard there, that she's somebody who's got used to being in prison and has continued to offend in spite of being in the system, suggests that she was not afraid of it. And when there are no consequences to your behaviour, because actually being on the inside is no worse than being on the outside, there isn't really a reckoning for you on any level personally and psychologically, because the consequences that would mostly put the average human being off committing a crime just don't exist for Angela Simpson. And this makes her super dangerous, because let's just say she finds it easier on the inside. She knows when her medication's coming, she knows when her breakfast, dinner, and food is being served, she knows where she's staying, she knows what healthcare is going to be available to her, and so on and so forth. It does, to some degree, make you question, what's the point of being outside of the system when you're relatively comfortable being inside it? And if you don't have
brand new luxury apartments, if you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Those boundaries, because they don't concern you, that means that the actions that you are willing to engage in have no limits unless you have a moral compass that sets those limits. And the thing about Simpson is, she doesn't seem to have that moral code of conduct that would hold her back to behaving in an ethical and moral way, which means that she is somebody who is genuinely walking around without any care or concern about consequences, and with behaviours that the vast majority of us would find horrific to engage in. Because like I said, she's kind of a law unto herself. It seems like she started her sex work really early. This is because she's trying to pay for her drug use and also covering her bills. And when you're a young person growing up, particularly when you've been abused throughout your life, I think it makes sense that the way that you would feel towards the individuals coming and seeking your services can potentially be very negative. I think that my experience personally of working with sex workers many years ago helped me to understand further why so many of those sex workers have a really negative view on the punters who come to see them, because they have solicitors, doctors, cab drivers, teachers, youth workers, a whole array of men coming and seeking their services, which clouds their belief around all men. Because they come from every walk of life, it makes them feel that every single individual wants to go out and abuse their relationships and use women in this way. But actually, it's just a tiny minority of individuals who want to do it, who come from different areas of the world within the work that they do, but actually that still have quite similar personality traits. But as I've said, because it clouds their perception of these individuals, it makes them feel very untrusting of men, full stop. And I think for Angela Simpson, this is how she starts to build a rage towards these men, and also a permission base for what she feels they deserve. Now, it's through this sex work that they suspect she meets her accomplice, Edward Cracker McFarland. He's apparently her pimp at the time, and it seems that these two were, shall we say, problematic bedfellows. They were equally as psychopathic to some degree, equally malevolent, and without a doubt, equally as dangerous. But when I look back at Angela per se, she never had a normal life in any way, shape or form. She never managed to form any real relationship. She didn't really have any true friends. She did have 4 children, but none of them lived with her. She actually refuses to talk about why none of them lived with her and why they were removed from her care. But I don't think it takes Einstein to recognize that if she has drug dependency issues and she's somebody with a really chaotic lifestyle, she's not gonna be the person to bring up children. And yes, she doesn't wanna talk about them. And I think that when she discusses that in interviews, it's as if she's trying to be protective, but I don't think that for a minute. I think that the reason that she doesn't talk about them is she has no control over what's happened to them. She's fully culpable and responsible for failing, and she really doesn't like to wear that particular coat. It doesn't go with her moral vigilante mindset that she's decided to carve out for herself. And that is a result, as far as her parenting is concerned, of failure. And she really doesn't want to be put in a category of failure, full stop. She also uses them as a reason for committing the crime that she carries out. when she's interviewed after her sentencing, she very much talks about how they're the motivation behind her killing. And it's ludicrous because the last thing that her kids would want would be for her to murder anybody. That goes against the grain of what any child wants for a parent to do, because it means that parent won't be present. And she also refuses to talk about how she became a mother. She also doesn't talk about who the fathers are. But this could be to do with the fact that she genuinely doesn't know who they are. I mean, she lived a chaotic lifestyle. She lived a dependent lifestyle, so she could easily have got pregnant by different individuals. It doesn't make sense that she wants to hold back from telling the truth about who those individuals are. I mean, it doesn't change anything. But it's this shrouded in mystery circumstance. And I genuinely believe that Angela Simpson has worked very hard on creating a persona. And the mystery element, the enigma element, will be very alluring to her. When Simpson's interviewed down the line about her mental illness, one of the things that she was willing to divulge is that she had battled with it pretty much since she was 10 years of age. And she went on to say that in spite of the fact that she did have issues with her mental health, it was no excuse for what she did, and that she wants no sympathy. So that's a bit of background on who this killer is. The murder itself is absolutely heinous beyond belief. In fact, it was described later as having a severe level of cruelty, and I think that's a massive understatement. I'm going to go through what actually played out, and I think you'll agree that a severe level of cruelty does not really describe the horror of what unfolded. She lures Terry Neely basically to a vacant apartment that she had access to. She'd done this by promising him drugs and sex. He was known to be confined to a wheelchair, and when I say the murder is the stuff of nightmares, I mean it's straight out of a movie. Genuinely, the closest that I can ally it to is when you hear about people who've been murdered and tortured because they were involved in mafia situations. You know, those really protracted, drawn out killings, which are not just about murdering the person. It's about humiliating them. It's about terrifying them. It's about denigrating and desecrating who they are. It's about destroying every element, both from their psychology, their emotional stability, their experience physically. It's about a collision and a collusion of all of those horrible things happening at the same time in technicolor. She tortured Terry Neely for 3 horrific days. I mean, we all know what it's like to, shall we say, as I did the other day, probably can't see, it's a little bit dark, trap a finger in a door. You would genuinely have thought I had been decapitated. If only the decapitation had involved me still being able to scream. What I'm saying is, I have quite a high pain threshold. When you slam a heavy door on your finger, it does make you wince a little and do a little bit of a dance. And that lasted 4 seconds. Imagine being tortured for 3 horrific days, knowing that the likelihood is that you're never going to be leaving that place alive. So you're dealing with the horror of the pain, the agony of what's playing out, and the knowledge that this is probably the last person that you're ever going to see, because they are going to end your life in this horrific way. As she was torturing him, as she was killing him, she basically made him watch himself in a mirror. So she beats him, she stabs him, she pulls out all of his teeth, and he's having to witness this happening to himself. I don't know whether any of you have ever watched the film Law Abiding Citizen with Gerard Butler, but it did remind me of a particular scene out of that. But just put yourself in that situation where you are literally physically looking at yourself being murdered. You're having to witness what's playing out in front of your eyes, through your eyes, in your pain, watching your pain. She even went so far as to drive a 3-inch nail into his brain. She caused multiple blunt force head injuries. She stabbed him over 50 times. She also superficially sliced his throat, so that wasn't enough to kill him, but there was a big slice there. Then she strangled him with a coaxial cable before she dismembered him. We're talking about a real human being here, a vulnerable wheelchair user. This is what Angela Simpson did to him. She then cuts up his body, removes his arms, removes his legs from his torso. Then she puts the body in a rubbish bin and sets it alight. That's where the police find his body, in a car park behind the Covenant of Grace Church in Phoenix. When she's arrested for the crime, it's worth noting that she said that she was kind of relieved because she was already in jail on this unrelated armed robbery charge. That was in August 2009. And it's at this point that she's initially interviewed by the police. And it doesn't take much for her to just agree to tell them everything. In fact, she says that if they give her a candy bar, she will exchange all the information that they required. And I bet for the police officers, they were like, oh, if only the interrogations we have to do on a day-to-day level were this simple. Bring in the Snickers bars, Al. At the end of the day, this is somebody who desperately wanted to talk, simple as. And so the candy bar is just really so that she gets a little something to engage in the joyful exchange that she is about to engage in, because Angela Simpson is super proud of her work and she expresses absolutely no remorse. And with respect, she continues to this day to have no remorse for what she talks about. Now, when the firefighters initially attended the scene at the church, this is where they've been called to put out the garbage fire, because initially it's considered that there's some kind of prank going on. They just think kids have set fire to something and just there to deal with that social nuisance. But very quickly, it becomes clear both from the smell and from the sight that they're looking at that this wasn't a prank at all. Inside that bin, they find the charred remains of what appears to be a male body. Immediately, the firefighters alert the police. They get to the scene quite quickly and the investigation begins. But the next few days were really difficult for the investigators because, first of all, Angela Simpson had done a really good job when it came down to disguising the body, so to speak. It wasn't easily identifiable at all because, firstly, it's been badly burned, but the arms and the legs have been cut off. Even the dental records were useless because Terry's teeth had literally been ripped from his mouth. And bizarrely, the care facility that Terry lived at.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I hadn't even reported him missing at this point, which is deeply disturbing. If you have vulnerable people in your care and you don't notice when they don't come back, I don't know. It suggests the word care facility is probably not the best title for the environment, but no one knows it has gone missing. So during the autopsy, the medical examiner has to try to figure out who this is. And when they're looking for the fingerprints, they also note that they're pretty much burned off. But fortunately, the pathologist could make out a partial print. And from this partial print, they're able to identify Terry Neely. And this is where the investigation is therefore able to proceed. So who was Terry Neely? Well, I've alluded to it a little bit in the fact that he's vulnerable. Bear in mind who he is and who Simpson claims he is, shall we say, differ. So Simpson claims that Terry Neely had bragged to her that he was this informant for the CIA. And for her, allegedly, that was reason enough to commit this horrific, heinous and brutal murder. It's a strange scenario for Simpson because she seems to believe that there are kind of different levels and layers of people who deserve to die. So child molesters, numero one. Police informants and snitches, numero two. If you are an individual who's a police officer, numero three. So at the end of the day, if you're a copper, if you're a snitch, or if you abuse kids, you're fair game as far as Simpson is concerned. But she said that he used to brag to her that he'd inform on criminals and then the police would arrest them and they wouldn't be able to escape the authorities because they'd be locked up for life, so he didn't have to worry about any vengeance on their part. But according to the police, this wasn't true. It's absolute BS. So it doesn't matter that Simpson's telling this story about him being this police informant. It wasn't real. Terry wasn't actually a snitch at all. Now, if her story was true, that would mean that he was purposefully and willfully lying to Simpson the whole time. So he would be fabricating this idea that he was somebody special somebody moral who's going out of his way to inform on criminals and get them locked away to, shall we say, make him seem like a better human being than he was. But just going to throw it out there, you'd have to spend around 1 millisecond with somebody like Simpson to understand that the idea of telling her that you were somebody who just informed on snitches was probably not the best thing to do. She doesn't come across as somebody who's thinking that a snitch would be a cool human being. And it makes me question whether this is just, again, an absolute fabrication where she is concerned. He may well have never told her that he was a police informant. This may just be a justification for her actions. And the sad thing about that is that, as far as I'm concerned, there's a strong likelihood that Terry was killed for literally no other reason than Simpson liked the thrill of it. She really enjoyed inflicting pain and torture, and she needed a reason, a permission base to do that. And bear in mind, he's quite a vulnerable guy. So the very fact that he's vulnerable, that's an added permission base as far as she's concerned, because she's physically going to be able to dominate him in a way that she wouldn't be able to dominate another man. So arguably, she creates, in my opinion, this narrative that he's this bad guy who's informing on people that she feels shouldn't be informed on because the police are the lowest of the low, aside from snitches and child molesters. And therefore, anybody who goes ahead and dobs in a criminal deserves the punishment that somebody like her is going to inflict on them. And whilst that vigilante morality makes absolutely no sense to people who are well adjusted, if you want to create a story that makes you seem acceptable in prison, that gives you a level of respect in prison, then a snitches really did get stitches story, and I murdered this guy for telling the police about criminal behaviours of others, that would get her some brownie points as far as she's concerned. But like I said, I have a very unsettling feeling that she genuinely is somebody who's a thrill killer. She loves torture, she loves abuse, because we've also got to look at what she actually did to her victim. It was a protracted, drawn out, horrific, torturous murder. It went on for 3 days. She has to have enjoyed every single second of that. If it was just about eradicating him, executing him, she could have done that in a second. And I do feel that a lot of who Angela Simpson is wrapped up in a act that she's put on. And this act is all about giving herself leverage and an excuse for her heinous actions. For a start, if we're just going to look at Terry as her victim, why would a guy who's doing drugs with a sex worker say that he's a snitch? He's not living in a ditch. He knows the consequences of being a snitch. Everybody knows it. I'm not even in the criminal underworld, and I appreciate what the perception of criminals is towards individuals who inform on other people. It's not good. It's not a good look. It can lead you into serious problems. And this is somebody that knows Simpson and likely understands the kind of person that she is. So why would he disclose that he was a snitch? But it certainly would be an incredibly good story to tell the prisoners. It would be great to embolden her persona. It'd be fantastic for her to feel safe inside prison when she's incarcerated. After all, what kind of a prisoner would ever defend a snitch? She's now got a right to kill him. And interestingly, she's asked in an interview after she's sentenced how she'd feel if he was innocent of what she accused him of. And in that interview, she just says, oops, and laughs. Now, first off, you wouldn't have to say that because you'd know that they were telling the truth. You'd say, well, I don't need to question that because they specifically told me they were a snitch. So I don't have to worry that there was a mistake. He specifically told me he was a snitch. The fact that there was any license there for a potential mistake, again, speaks to me about her creating a myth of what really happened.
Do you believe him? Do you think he really was a snitch?
Oops, if he wasn't. Yes, I believe he was.
Yeah. When you consider that Angela Simpson didn't really care that Terry was a vulnerable, physically disabled and innocent man, it demonstrates the lack of conscience that she had around killing full stop. I think he could have been anyone. What mattered was her bloodlust, her desire for power, her desire to take what I believe would be some kind of level of uncontrollable rage and project it into a situation scenario, and in this case onto a person, that would at least give her a sense of dominance in a world where she had to some degree been dominated. He'd never married, so he was an individual who had struggled because he had issues with his physical disabilities. He was 46 years of age, he was paraplegic, he used a motorized wheelchair to get around. You can't get more vulnerable than that. Also had a mental disability, and that mental disability made him over-friendly towards strangers. So he was one of those people who was really keen to talk to people, he liked to make friends. And at the time of his death, he was living at an assisted living facility. And people said he was a really likable guy. He was really well liked in his community. He'd last been seen leaving his home on August the 2nd. It was about 8 p.m. when he was last seen. He was going off in his motorized wheelchair and suddenly he disappeared. But not in an obvious way where the care facility would actually inform the police that they were concerned about his whereabouts. Now, the way she was caught, well, interestingly and ironically, it was through an informant. So this informant told police at the scene, Terry talking to Simpson. In fact, the pair had been seen doing drugs together outside an apartment complex, so it probably wasn't the first time they'd spent time together anyway. And as I said before, by this time, Simpson was already in jail for committing armed robbery with her accomplice, Edward McFarland, who was known as Cracker. One of those names that sends shivers down your spine. Well, I mean, unless he likes to sit down with a glass of port and have some strong mature cheddar with some crackers, and that's why people associate him with that name. But looking at his face, I don't think that was the case. I wonder whether the word cracker is more associated with, I don't know, the physical ability that he might have to crack your bones. I have no evidence for that. I'm just saying, when you look at somebody's face, and the face speaks to you. Now, the witness who was the informant actually turned out to be the apartment manager. Apparently, Cracker had bragged to him about how he'd helped Simpson to dispose of Terry's body after the murder and subsequently threatened the apartment manager that if he told anyone, the same would happen to him. And I would hazard a guess that this particular apartment manager would be like, I think I'm probably going to accept that I'm not going to say anything because Cracker, firstly, has an incredibly scary name. Simpson apparently has dismembered some poor guy, and the police don't always take things seriously, so I'm just going to keep stum until it's safe to not do so. So at the end of the day, when they're both incarcerated, at this point, he speaks to the police. So the police then go on to speak to the neighbours, and they confirm that Simpson and Terry were indeed friends, so now they've got a connection between the two. And then acting on that information, the police went to the apartment that Simpson had access to. Here, they found loads of incriminating information. They find Terry's wheelchair that had been abandoned on the grass. So they actually get a warrant and they search the apartment. When they get in there, it is a harrowing scene. The carpet had been ripped up. There was very little furniture apart from a chair and that horrific full-length mirror, because we know what that was used for. They also found pliers, a gallon of great value.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Brand bleach and lots of blood. And you won't be surprised to find out that the blood turned out to be Terry's. So at this point, investigators armed with indisputable evidence, so they interview Simpson, and if they were in any way expecting some kind of a denial, they were in for a shock. An absolute shock. Because there wasn't going to be denial, and like I said, hand me a candy bar and the truth will be yours. Or at least the truth that Simpson wants to convey. So she openly confesses that she killed Terry. She laughs about it. She eats the candy bar that she'd requested. as a trade-off for this information. So she starts by admitting that she deceptively lured him to her apartment. It was about 8 p.m. that she did that. And the promise that she gave him was that she was going to have sex with him and that they could do drugs at the apartment. She claimed that they were the things that he'd come for, and that makes sense. There's drugs on offer, there's sex on offer, and he was actually a regular client. So if she's now suddenly offering sex for free, she knows it is going to take the bait, and he does. So she says to Terry that they're going to go back to the apartment, they're going to do some drugs, and that's how she gets him alone. When he meets her, they end up at this vacant apartment that she's got access to in North Phoenix. She said that she took him there because she hated him. She absolutely despised him. And she was good at acting in a friendly manner. She coerced him into a belief system where he was safe, where he was excited to be present with her, all the while festering with this deep resentment towards him. The minute that he gets back to the apartment with her, she begins. She deliberately beats him till he's bleeding, but not unconscious. She wants him to be conscious. She wants him to be fully aware of the horror that's happening to him. She got a kick out of every cry, out of every moment of pain that she inflicted on him. She enjoyed every plea for mercy that he asked for and begged for. She then admitted to beating him, to torturing him, until, as she put it, finally putting him out of his misery by slitting his throat and strangling him. But it was the strangulation that finally killed him. As I said, the slitting of the throat was more superficial than it was fatal. She admitted that she enjoyed watching him suffer as he had to see himself in the mirror, looking at his own reflection, and that really excited and thrilled her. And she said that she wanted to show him what he deserved for informing on a righteous person. And this is where I do feel investigators should be able to run off, get a dictionary, and just start reading aloud to her what the word righteous means. Because I don't know, Angela, I'm just going to throw it out there that a righteous person, just going to throw in the fact that the word right is in the actual. There's not a lot of words that have the actual word denoted specifically within the word itself to describe the kind of person that you'd be described. Righteous, they're right. There's somebody who's righteous. They are right in their actions. They're doing the right thing. Criminals do the wrong thing. Sorry, just gonna have to stop you in the interview until we figure out how to connect with this definition appropriately. Because the idea that she thinks that he's informed on a righteous person, somebody who essentially is a criminal, is bonkers. But again, it shows the kind of mentality of Angela Simpson. And again, she wants to portray something very specific. Bear in mind, she uses this kind of language that she wants to show him what he deserved for informing on a righteous person. That isn't for an audience of people at home. She's not that interested in people watching the TV who are living their lives in a righteous manner. She's doing it for an audience with criminals. She wants people who are bad to see her suggesting that they are good, and that Terry, who is good, is ultimately now bad for informing on these people, even though, like I said, it's highly unlikely that he even did that. And she chillingly went on to say that he was alive for most of the murder. So the torture that he endured was horrific, and he was very present whilst it was occurring. And you do have to think to yourself, after 3 days for Terry, I imagine that death was probably a welcome relief. She also divulged that this wasn't her only murder, but she did later retract that claim. Again, I think that she composes a persona and wants to live within that persona, and she likes messing with the narrative and reality. And what we hear spoken from her mouth is not what I believe is embedded in truth whatsoever. So the fact that she suggests that she's killed before, that doesn't surprise me. It adds to her reputation. She wants to be feared, but it probably isn't based in truth, because I do believe that Angela Simpson would be incredibly proud of more murders. She would like to have as many as possible. It's something that she wears with pride, essentially.
You claimed that that other people had been killed in that same part. You had killed other people. Have you killed other
people? No, I've never killed anyone else.
So that was something, just talk.
Right.
Now, her accomplice, Edward Cracker McFarland, he later claimed that he did actually take part in the murder, but Angela Simpson denies this, and she claims that he simply lent her his car to dispose of Terry's body. Does seem like Simpson had power over McFarland, whether it was fear or otherwise, but it's hard to imagine how Cracker was actually scared of her. I mean, he's this heavily tattooed criminal skinhead, and I do struggle a little bit with the idea that he would state claim to a murder and then she would say he wasn't involved with it at all, therefore protecting him. I don't believe that he would admit to that unless he'd been involved. But again, she knows that she's going to be in prison for the rest of her natural life. So why not seem like a righteous criminal and get somebody who was equally involved in a murder off the claim that they were? Again, this is just me suggesting my own thoughts, but I would say it was highly unusual for somebody to claim that they were actually involved in a murder that they were innocent of. So we get to the trial and the sentencing. So on March 22nd, 2012, Simpson pleads guilty to first degree murder. She's also charged with kidnapping and abandonment of a body. On April the 3rd, Judge Paul McMurdy, he gave her a natural life sentence plus 14 years. I love that. Do love the American system. You're going to prison for the rest of your natural life and 14 years. Just, is the rest of my natural life for the whole of my life? It is. It's the rest of your natural life. You will literally be carried out dead in a box. So rest of your natural life. Why have you given me extra 14 years? Because that's the way I roll. You're going to serve the whole of your life sentence. You're going to die. And then you're going to get an extra 14 years. Are you going to just like leave me in my cell? No. No. It's a metaphorical 14 years. It's because you're a very bad person, Angela Simpson. Just, why am I even having this conversation? Take her away for the rest of her natural life. Plus 14 years. I might go to 25 years next. Just get her out. Has anybody got a candy bar? Anyway, I digress. But that means that she's never going to get parole, which is a good thing. And during the trial, one of the bizarre things that she does is use her children in defense of her murder. And she says, I don't want my children or the people I consider to be my family in a place where there are snitches. Well, Angela Simpson, you're going to be very busy, because if you think that murdering people who are informing on criminals is a problem, wow, you're going to have a lifetime of murder, because witnesses are actual informants, just throwing it out there, just the good people who notice something terrible happening and then tell the police that it's happened so that the people who've done the horrible thing get brought to justice, they would still be informants. I know that what she's considering an informant is somebody who's directly speaking to the police, trying to catch people out so that they can then be brought to justice. But it's the same scenario. It's a reality that witnesses are essential snitches. And it's because of things like this that I genuinely believe that the persona that Angela Simpson is conveying is carefully constructed. I don't think this is about reality. I think this is a reality that she wants to create. I think she wants to be considered almost mythical and iconic in the way that she portrays herself. And I think she's doing that for a very manipulative reason. She's completely unrepentant. In the interviews that you listen to her within, she genuinely seems very cool, calm, collected, calculating. And she says things like, I believe informants and child molesters should be killed, period. Now, not gonna pretend for a minute that a lot of people don't feel that child molesters should find themselves in dire straits. I think we can all agree, me included, that I'd like to see child molesters placed in some pretty inhumane situations. I'm not gonna list them. We can all just imagine them in our heads for a moment. But to put child molesters and informants in the same category is absolutely bizarre. Because, you know, let's just have a few other scales there, like, you know, child molesters, serial killers, rapists, so on and so forth. There's a list of people who really should get put in those categories with child molesters before we get to informants, people who are just telling the police about people who are horrible, potentially informing on people who are child molesters, shall we say. She also went on to talk about the fact that she regretted not killing a second victim. So this is allegedly a guy who's an armed robber, Joseph Van Trost. And she said, I just didn't have the time. I had to go somewhere. I should have killed him whilst I had the chance.
Right, and I regret not killing my other victim. I should have killed him too. I just didn't have time. I had to go somewhere.
And tell me who that other victim was.
Joseph Van Trost for the armed robbery. Yeah. I should have killed him, but I had to go.
Will you kill again?
If the opportunity arises, I hope so.
So, are we putting armed robbers in that category? Is this category an expansive category? Where on your list is armed robbers? Also, it's a bit weird because she's in prison for an armed robbery. Oh, here we are, as the logic of Angela Simpson disintegrates in front of our eyes. Police actually described the crime of finding Terry's body and seeing what had occurred to him as one of the worst crimes that they had ever seen. And that in itself really just denotes the violence level that we're talking about here. These are dyed-in-the-wool investigators. When they found the body of Terry Neely, they said it was so blindsiding in their experience professionally, and even though they'd seen horrible things, they had never seen anything that reached that level of depravity and horror. Now let's talk about the interview, because she's infamous for this interview. She did this particular interview with Mike Watkiss. It took place after the sentencing on April 4th, 2012. And I would say it will probably go down in history as one of the most blasé interviews ever recorded when you consider the content they're discussing. And now, as I've alluded to already, I genuinely think that this particular killer wanted to be notable, wanted to be notorious, wanted to be feared, wanted to have a reputation base. And so she carefully crafted a character for herself. Allegedly, some people say that she wanted to be like Eileen Wuornos. She wanted that infamy. But the killing of vulnerable and disabled victim is incomparable, as far as I'm concerned, to Wuornos's murder. Bear in mind, Eileen Wuornos instantly shot her victims. I'm not defending Eileen Wuornos, by the way. I'm just saying that we cannot put in the same category Wuornos and this woman, because Wuornos genuinely is a visionary killer. So she acts with a belief that she's under threat and shoots her victims because of that. And here with Simpson, we've got a protracted, drawn out, torturous murder. This is somebody who took thrill in killing. She's much more like Joanna Denehy, who's a British serial killer who is a thrill killer. If you haven't seen my video on that, go and have a watch of it, because she is far more the typology of what we're talking about where Angela Simpson is concerned. And very, very similar to Angela Simpson in crafting this facade of being this brutal killer who's not scared of anyone or anything and wanting a reputation that precedes her.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
It's really important to have that notoriety. She and Simpson are very, very similar, interchangeable to some degree in that way. Now, when Watkiss asks her, are you remorseful? In this really cold and heartless response, she says,
not at all.
Why?
Why would I be?
Why would I be? Just gonna stop for a minute and list why you might be. Because you killed a vulnerable man who is disabled and who it seems like you likely made up a backstory that wasn't true just to give you permission to murder him. Just start there, Angela Simpson. Do you know that you've got a whole life tariff and then you've got an extra amount of years just because that's how horrible you are? Anyway, I digress. She absolutely had no concern for a victim at all. She said, I don't know why the media acts like the motherfucker couldn't walk. He walks very well. No, he doesn't. He was living at an assisted care facility because he literally didn't walk very well. He was paraplegic. Then she went on to really coldly recount the killing. She said, I walked him upstairs, kicked his ass, and killed him. And when asked if she had any regrets, her response was, again, really devoid of any concern for a victim. She said, of course, I did the right thing. He's white trash. Someone had to take it out. She also chillingly maintained, there's always a racial component. I wouldn't kill another black individual. Sorry, just gonna revert to the list. You said that child molesters and informants, and actually police, they all deserve to die. I did say that. What about a black child molester? No, I'm not gonna kill a black child molester. What about a black informant? No, I'm not gonna kill a black informant. This list is not working, Angela Simpson, is it? It's not, you can't do that. You can't have a they're in because they're white, they're out because they're black. It's not gonna be effective. No one can work with that kind of list. Anyway, again, why do I think that she's saying that? I think she wants to specifically come down on the I am pro-black and I am anti-white, because we do appreciate that in the prison system in the US, it's very challenging, and a lot of people find themselves having to join groups and align themselves with their race, because otherwise they can find themselves in some very dire territory. It's not the way it should be. It's wrong, and it should be managed in a far more effective way by the prison system, but it's the way things are. So I think that she wants, again, that notorious nature to be seen as somebody who isn't just somebody who's going out and righteously killing informants and righteously wanting to kill child molesters. She also doesn't like white people either. In fact, any of the regrets that she kind of harboured were just self-centred. They were, I suppose, a reflection, you could say, of her cold-blooded psychopathy. So she said, I regret the fact that my co-defendants found it necessary to divulge so much to the detectives. They were people I really cared about. Okay, so you mean the people who just snitched on you? Yeah, how ironic. She said, I regret that they were around me at any point. They weren't actually with me for any of my crimes. She also continued to maintain that she acted completely alone, so she wants to take full responsibility for this, because again, that makes her more notorious. When questioned about the 3 days that she spent driving nails through a man's head, pulling his teeth out and horrifically torturing him, she coldly replied,
I found it necessary.
She then asserted, more women should kill, equal opportunities, and then laughed. Bizarre. When Watkins asked her about her sentence, she said she was unconcerned. She said, I got a lot of family in prison and I'm okay with that. I got many sisters in prison. I'm looking forward to seeing them. Prison isn't that much of a punishment to spend my life with my family. And like I said earlier on, that demonstrates and lends itself to the scenario I was talking about regarding her being very institutionalized. It isn't a punishment because she gets 3 meals a day. She gets to spend it with people that she relates to. And at the end of the day, she's somebody who's comfortable with that kind of lifestyle. She also went on to say what many people probably think, that justice was not served in the courtroom. In fact, she said, I should have got the death penalty. That would have been justice. Again, don't believe that for a minute. I genuinely don't. I think that she is full of BS. I think she wants everybody to believe that that's how big, bold, and brave she is. Hey, at the end of the day, I win. They should have given me the death sentence, but look at me, I'm still breathing. But if she'd been given the death sentence, I think it would have been an altogether different reality for her. There's absolutely no question in my mind, and this is something that's fundamentally quite unsettling. Prison never acted as a deterrent for her. She's an unrepentant killer. She's somebody who's quite comfortable within the walls of an institution, whether that's prison or a mental health environment. She's somebody who thrives to some degree in those circumstances. So with all of that in mind, it's really unsurprising that prison staff fear Angela Simpson. They're afraid of her. When she was asked, will you kill again? Her response was absolutely unrepentant. She said, if the opportunity arises, I hope so. I'm a little upset. I won't be able to kill more snitches. I think you will. You're in prison. Prison's full of snitches. I literally cover a lot of cases where people have been informed on by their cellmates. Just, again, bit of an inconsistency, bit of a lack of reality involved in that statement. But like I said, I don't think Angela Simpson really cares about reality. I think she's creating one for herself. She also said, I think something is wrong with the world I live in, but according to other people, yes, something is wrong with me. Yes, yes, something is so wrong with you. It is so wrong with you. Everybody can see it's so wrong with you. Even you know that something is so wrong with you. But again, she's playing that moral vigilante card. At the end of the day, I just killed somebody who was an informant. Interestingly, a little bit of trivia for you here. We have a series in the UK called Killing Eve. It's a very successful series. And the creator, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, she said that the main character of Killing Eve was created around Simpson. So she watched an interview where Simpson broke character, essentially. So she doesn't think that the cameras are rolling any longer. And she basically gets really excited and says, that's going to be wicked. Make it look good, please. So she's got this persona. She's performing. It's not actually who she is. And the moment that they stop, as far as she's concerned, getting her on film, she kind of becomes this childish person who's more intrigued and interested in how she's coming across. So like I said, it's an act. The prison staff who work with her describe her as a very scary individual. Lieutenant Bale asserts that she doesn't seem to have the inhibition controls that most people would. Another officer, Sergeant Pike, said that she's very much a threat to staff. She creeps me out, was the quote. Another asserted, I've never met an inmate who made me so uncomfortable. She gave me visceral descriptions of her crimes and with glee. She even produced a set of graphic drawings titled Officers Down, one of which was titled Pigs in Blankets. Another summed her up as extraordinarily disturbing. Again, I do think that part of that is her need for power and control and dominance. I don't believe that beneath the surface, she is that person fully. I think she likes knowing that people fear her. It's the only visibility that she's got. She's nobody. She's never going to amount to anything, and she knows that. So to have some kind of visibility, to have some meaning, to have some importance, it's the only way that she can have a level of power in the world. And the fact that she's describing her crimes, again, that's because she's a thrill killer, she's reliving it, she's enjoying it. It's a psychological anchor back to those moments. But also, it means that she can see the impact that she's having on the person who's hearing the information. She's enjoying seeing their issues, seeing their discomfort, seeing their concern and trauma, essentially. That gives her an opportunity to exert that power once again that she's lost, because to all intents and purposes, she has no power anymore whatsoever. Simpson will live out her days in Marisopa County Jail. Ironically, this is a hardened, cold and callous killer stated that jail is awful. They have no compassion. It's just such a bizarre concept, isn't it? That someone who so viciously and mercilessly murdered a vulnerable, disabled and innocent man could ever claim that she deserved to be shown any level of the compassion she clearly lacked. In fact, as I said, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, the creator of Killing Eve, based her brutal psychopathic character, Villanelle, on Simpson's cold, unrepentant and gleeful attitude towards her heinous murder. So with respect, we're glad that you don't feel there's very much compassion, Angela Simpson. Compassion is not something that you deserve one shred of. Also, just a bit of information that I found out, I couldn't corroborate whether this is absolutely true, but just to share it with you anyway. Since she's been incarcerated, apparently she's converted to Islam. She's apparently married in prison, although there isn't actually any information on her partner. But should you feel the need to, you can apparently write to her, find out more about her, because her postal address is readily available. If you're bored on a Sunday afternoon and you're like, I just need to find out a little bit more about who this person has apparently got together with, then off you go. Maybe you could ask her whether that list of who deserves to live or die has changed since she's been incarcerated also. This case is one of those that just blows your mind, isn't it? Because you can't wrap your head around why Angela Simpson really did act in this way, aside from to acknowledge that she is a thrill killer. She is somebody who takes great delight, great joy in the horror and pain and agony of others around her. And let's be honest, The judge is absolutely right. Don't just lock her up for a natural life. Add on a few more years for good measure. And I'm sure that when that's over, I don't know, there'll be some kind of cart arriving to take her promptly down to the depths of hell, where she and the other notorious film killers can all sit down and get very warm for the rest of eternity. That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.